Hello, Nikki.
Hi, Bill.
How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fine. I take it you're back in Washington, D.C. Last time you were on the Weekend Blog, you were vacationing in Maine.
So I'm back. It's raining. It stinks. So.
why don't you introduce yourself again to all the Blogging Heads fans out there?
Okay, sounds good. My name is Nikki Kurokawa. I am Director of Research Analysis at the Winston Group, which is a strategy and public polling firm. I am a recovering think tanker. I have come from the Cato Institute and a bunch of other places. I'm currently a senior fellow at the Independent Women's Forum, and I also blog at the Washington Examiner.
Fantastic. And again, I'm Bill Scher with Campaign for America's Future, blogging at ourfuture.org, also proprietor of liberaloasis.com and host of the Liberal Oasis radio show podcast. We decided today for this edition, we're so close to Election Day, and there's so many interesting races to pick four that have particularly interesting state blogging around it. And I think the richest state blogging community that I can find is in Alaska, where we have the three-way race between the Republican nominee Joe Miller, the Republican incumbent turned independent write-in Lisa Murkowski, and the Democrat Scott McAdams. And there's just a ton of both thoughtful analysis and smear-mongering going on among several of the Alaska blogs. I don't want to take up too much time just rattling them all off, but you have the Alaska Dispatch, which is suing Joe Miller to get access to his employment records. You have a national conservative blog, Dan Rio, alleging cocaine use by Lisa Murkowski, and Eric Erickson at Red State accusing Murkowski of profiting off of TARP. And you have over at the Mudflats, I believe Senator Mark Begich's brother, I think it's Todd Begich, I'm sorry. He had a video presentation up there where he is giving a mathematical argument that Murkowski cannot win, that voting for her is inherently wasting your vote, that there's too many built-in votes for the Republican and the Democrat, that she can't run up the middle to get to a plurality, and therefore, if you want to beat Joe Miller, you have to vote for Scott McAdams. It seems, just based on the blogging, it seems wild and woolly from what's going on up there.
Yeah, it's really interesting, and I think the fact that this has turned into a three-way race is really sort of unprecedented, because the last time there has been a successful writing candidate was actually Strom Thurmond. So, illustrious shoes to fill, absolutely.
Now, I see that, I didn't find anything really harsh against McAdams, the Democrat.
Right.
You're seeing this fierce back and forth between Murkowski and Miller online. Now, polling shows that Murkowski and Miller are deadlocked around the mid-30s,
mm-hmm.
and McAdams is in the mid-20s, so it's not necessarily that no one hates McAdams or he's got no skeleton in his closet somewhere that we haven't heard about yet, but certainly no one's talking about that. All of the muck is happening online between Miller and Murkowski, it seems.
Yeah, and actually, as you mentioned before, the whole with Joe Miller not divulging anything personal, period, going forward for the rest of the campaign, McAdams actually took the high road. One of the papers asked him about it, and he said, I guess I don't have a whole lot of commentary. If I had my way, the conversation in rooms like this and the dialogue in our state's media would be focused on the issues as opposed to this train wreck no one can take their eyes off of in the form of a family feud between Sarah's endorsed candidate and the senator.
I mean, it's a classic strategy in a three-way race to hope that two other people go super negative and then you can run above the fray and profit off of the other two driving up each other's negatives. His ad campaign... I think it's a very ingenious ad campaign, probably the best ad campaign of the cycle, certainly on the Democratic side. And the initial one, sort of slyly says, Joe and Lisa think this election's about them, I think it's about the people of Alaska. You know, that comment you just mentioned seemed to be right in that narrative.
Yeah, well, my favorite ad of this race so far actually has been some supporters of Joe Miller did a play on the Old Spice commercial. The, look at your ballot, now back at me, now back at your ballot. Do you see her name on there? And I thought it's really funny. So, you know, the fact that Republicans are picking up pop culture, you know, that's a new advent.
The concept is very smart. I wonder, though, this notion that Murkowski is being presumptuous, acting entitled, being a sore loser, all that kind of thing. That feels a little insidery to me. I mean, I'm not an Alaska voter, so who am I to say what Alaska voters are going to react to this stuff? But the notion that she somehow, you know, doesn't deserve to be in this race seems to me to be a little presumptuous. I would think from a voter standpoint, you know, I can decide who I think is qualified now. Don't tell me someone doesn't belong here.
Yeah, I mean, I am a Chicagoan, so I think if someone ran ads like that against Daley, it would drop like a rock. It wouldn't hit home, so.
Right.
But I think the fact that they're all so close in polling, as you mentioned, they're all, you know, neck and neck in the mid-30s, means that no one is going to drop out either. This is not a situation like we see in Florida with Kendrick Meek being so far behind Kristen Rubio. So they really are going to be in it until the bitter bloody end, so.
Yeah, I mean the pressure is on Meek to drop out because he's been stuck in third place, although with a big enough chunk that he can deprive Krista victory.
Yeah.
And Krista's basically running like a Democrat now.
Mm-hmm.
And he's attracting endorsements from certain Democrats, so there's an argument to say, hey, Meek, you know, take one for the team here. We're not going to abandon you for the rest of your political career, but let's not have Rubio win. Whereas in Alaska, you know, there's no reason. I mean, Murkowski has said she was still caucus with the Republicans.
Yeah.
So you can't lean on McAdams to say, give it up for Murkowski.
Yeah.
And Murkowski and Miller, you know, that's a personal blood feud at this point. So why would either one of them step out?
Right. As you mentioned before, one of the interesting things with this whole cocaine allegation thing, when I saw that a conservative blogger had accused Lisa Murkowski of doing cocaine before she was elected senator in 1998, my eyes rolled. It was just like another, oh my God, drug warrior thing. But actually digging into Dan Rayl's comments a little bit, what I actually found interesting is that one of his comments is, you know, it was the 80s, Lisa, in Alaska, who cares? His point actually was that here's someone who is passing laws that she thinks she's exempt from, which I actually thought was an interesting take.
And let's stress here, no reputable news organization has run with this story.
Right.
I only mention it to note how virulent the online commentary is. And Dan mm-hmm. Rayl is not a small conservative blogger. He's a pretty notable conservative blogger and well-read in the conservative community. I have no idea if anyone in Alaska is picking up on this so much, except for the fact that an Alaska blog, Alaska Pride, picked up what Dan Rayl was saying. And but Alaska noted that Anchorage Daily News has not addressed it. The big conservative talk radio host there in Alaska, Dan Fagan, is not, even though he's a Miller supporter, he's not picking up the story. A caller attempted to raise the issue on his program, and Fagan cut him off. So it doesn't seem necessarily this is going to be, you know, the tipping point issue. I mean, there's so much swirling around right now. I don't know what's going to be the tipping point issue, you know, 3 weeks from now.
Yeah.
But people are definitely, you know, throwing every, you know, piece of mud they have online, at least, to see what will stick.
Right. It's not as ugly as, say, the Illinois race, which we'll get to in a little bit. But all the accusations, Red State has been really active in showing all the sketchy land deals that the Murkowskis have allegedly been involved in, that they have benefited from the TARP payouts, like you mentioned before. So this is really, it's going to get really ugly up there, I think.
Well, let's shift to the Illinois race, which is one of those races where I think not a lot of folks thought the Republicans would have a great shot here. Obviously, this is Barack Obama's
right.
former seat, and Illinois has been pretty blue as of late, although it's obviously been scrambled with the Blagojevich scandal.
Yeah.
And when the Delaware race seemed to be taken out of the Republican hands with the nomination of Christine O'Donnell, and that made people say there's no way Republicans could take over the Senate now. They had to run the table with that. It's a race like Illinois being still being competitive in the polling, which makes some people say, hey, you know, Republicans could still pull this off somehow.
Right.
There is a path to 10 if you pick up a state like Illinois. And they just had their national debate on Meet the Press last week, where both candidates' major scandals, Mark Kirk's being his misspeaking about his military record, and how do you pronounce, I don't know how to pronounce the Democrat's name.
Giannoulias, Alexei Giannoulias.
His family's bank had given loans to mobsters, and there's a question, what did they know, and how complicit were they? And those two issues seem to be dominating the discussion at the expense of perhaps actual issues.
Mm-hmm.
What's been the conservative take on all this?
Well, as a Chicagoan, I was just glad that Meet the Press made the national audience appreciate the hell that we've been going through for the past like year. It's been such an ugly race. Because actually it wasn't a close race up until a few months ago. It was all Mark Kirk's race, and I'm actually from Mark Kirk's district. It was all his, and then all this stuff started coming out about his military record. So it really is like, who do people find the least reprehensible? Because both their unfavorables are really, really high. There's not a lot that can be picked up because people just don't like either of them.
The conservative blog Chicago Daily Observer summed it up by saying, both candidates are at best flawed and at worst execrable. Voters feel as though they're choosing between a kick in the groin and a poke in the eye. Kirk, a 10-year North Shore congressman, couldn't be perceived as a serial liar, utterly devoid of principle, with no moral compass. In short, a crass opportunist and ideological windsock. I'm going to botch his name again. The one-term state treasurer is perceived as a clueless idiot, utterly lacking in judgment, whose performance as an officer at his now defunct family bank was beyond inept, in short, out of his league. Now he's predicting that Clerk comes out ahead of this sad story. I'm not going to be in the prediction game. But after that debate on Sunday, another flap was pushed from some of the area liberal blogs, an audio recording of Mark Kirk saying he was going to have some sort of program in place to ferret out alleged voter fraud, and he ticked off only African-American majority areas, which led both Arch Pundit and the Capital Facts blog to pounce on him and to accuse him of trying to suppress the black vote. I take it conservative bloggers are coming to Kirk's defense on this one.
Yeah, I mean, it's also important to remember that conservatives don't really like Mark Kirk. I mean, he is pro-choice. He had voted for the cap and trade bill last year, so he's not high on their priority list. And there's been a lot of outside money flooding in recently, I think largely because, as you mentioned, it's a Senate seat that has to be in play now because the O'Donnell seat is out of play. But overall, he's not one of their favorite people. The voter fraud thing obviously has been a drum that has been beaten for years and years and years by John Fund and a bunch of other people. But something that Arch Pundit had mentioned is this, you know, if you're really concerned about voter fraud, having people standing at precincts is not the best way to go after it. There's absentee ballots that are a concern. There's voter registration stuff that's a concern. But actually having someone at the ballot is like pretty much the least effective way to go at it. And if anything, yeah, you do end up suppressing the vote because you're making it more painful. You're making it more difficult. You have all these armies of lawyers there that are checking people's IDs and slowing the thing down even more, which discourages people from going out in those precincts.
Now, the other liberal blog here, Capital Facts blog, was a little bit charitable to Kirk, saying it's Kirk's right to do this. There's nothing illegal about it as long as his operatives stay within the law come election day. Polls show that black voters aren't backing him at all, And there's a big push by Democrats now to turn out black voters, so I can even see why he's doing it. But bragging about voter suppression efforts in black precincts is more than a little unseemly. He pretty much deserves whatever heat he gets. Chicago Daily Observer their prediction that Kirk would win was based on the notion that there would not be as high an African-American turnout this year as there was in Illinois 2 years ago when Barack Obama was on the ballot. I guess the question is, can black voters be energized by the notion, hey, this guy's trying to suppress my vote, I'm damn sure going to show up now?
Another thing that had come up actually was that when Mark Kirk was speaking, he had said that he was worried about people jiggering the vote, which then sparked a whole racial, you know, that word sounds like another word. And so Red State had a field day with that, saying, you know, that this is just the Giannullis camp playing the race card. It's that whole bit is like a bit much, but
yeah, I don't understand the argument there.
Really distracting side argument from the fact that these two candidates have nothing worthwhile to talk about. All they're doing is flinging mud at each other. Another issue that's come up, weirdly enough, hysterically from Glenn Beck's blog, The Blaze, is the issue that Illinois has suppressed military ballots, which has actually, Capital Facts blog, Rich Miller, super fantastic, pointed out that it's not the state's fault. This is one issue where the state of Illinois did actually not screw something up. It's local municipalities that were remiss in sending stuff out. So it wasn't Chicago even. It wasn't Cook County. It was just some small downstate counties.
Now, would you say that was actually broken by Glenn Beck's blog? Because I haven't heard of his new site, The Blaze, you know, making waves yet. It's sort of a side issue. I mean,
yeah, he had it, and then it was like a drudge headline. But it's one of those non-issues that's being made into an issue,
right?
Because it's shiny object October. But my favorite headline of today's campaign stuff came out of Illinois, actually. There was a candidate whose name was misspelled on the ballot in Chicago in 23 precincts.
Wow.
His name is Rich Whitney, and it was spelled as Rich Whitey. And it happens to be predominantly in minority precincts, so that was just a really unfortunate gaffe.
Now, is he a Democrat or Republican?
He's a third party guy.
Third party.
Yeah.
So he was not going to get elected anyway, most likely.
No, I mean, like if it were in California, like Rich Whitey, but.
Another, you know, most of the talk has been about how many seats that Republicans are going to take from Democrats. But Kentucky is one where the Democrat could take from the Republicans and mitigate what would otherwise be a solid Republican result. Rand Paul is only polling a few points ahead of Jack Conway. And the Kentucky liberal blogging community, which does exist, has sort of been
prolific,
trying to amplify Jack Conway's talking, which particularly on the issue of Rand Paul's support of a $2,000 Medicare deductible, which has been a feature of Jack Conway's ads, using video of Paul, and Paul's been trying to partially distance himself from it and partially embrace it. So he's trying to make clear that he's not supporting that deductible for current seniors, he's only supporting it for people who are 55 and younger. And so there was video of him seemingly attacking the rich in defending this position, saying, why should, you know, this Medicare money be given out to people like Bill Gates? And the liberal Kentucky blog Barefoot and Progressive headline, video evidence of Rand Paul's pinko call for class warfare against the rich. I don't know if how conservative bloggers are feeling about Rand Paul dabbling into that pool.
I think he's, yeah, it's uncertain ground, but I watched the video, and actually what he seems to be advocating for is, higher deductibles, I think, are needed, but overall it is means testing that is what he's advocating for. People that have the financial means, who have a lot more in the bank and who have, you know, bigger retirement savings and have been pulling in more income, should not be receiving the same amount of benefit. They shouldn't be coming sort of from the same starting place. And I think that's a legitimate stance. means testing is featured pretty heavily in a lot of stuff that Cato and Heritage and the other standard right-wing think tanks have worked on for the past couple of years. So it's not as redistributionist as Barefoot and Progressive made it out to be.
And he's trying to, I think he's trying to say now that we should be able to have a debate about how Medicare is financed to help defend his position. But is there any concern that, he was leading through most of this race, and now by really kind of, it's sort of to when he got wrapped up in the civil rights issue, talking about the civil rights act of the 60s, that he doesn't seem to have a way to give an answer, move on to the next thing that's better turf for him. He seems inclined to, really bore down into an issue that's going to be weaker ground for him. Is there any concern on the right that he's just not a savvy enough politician to get the debate back where it's going to be stronger for him?
I think so. And, this is obviously something that we saw with his father's presidential campaign as well. There is the art of the soundbite, and the Paul family seems to not super be real great at mastering that. Honestly, the Republicans, the party, has not been courageous in talking about Medicare reform, period. The only person who really has been Paul Ryan, and he has been absolutely vilified. The fact that Medicare has absolutely become a third rail, that when we saw the healthcare debate, it was the Democrats want to cut Medicare. No, the Republicans want to cut Medicare. And I think there does need to be an honest conversation, but I don't think he's doing himself any favors, absolutely, on the national stage by sticking on that. Yeah, if he gets back on taxes, if he gets back on spending, that's good for Republicans. If he stays on the other stuff, on the big, deep entitlement stuff, that's not good for them.
Now, one of the Kentucky conservative blogs, Conservative Edge, trying to give Rand Paul some backup and shift this back to Conway, said Conway's latest commercial takes a serious proposal by Rand Paul to try to solve the estimated $60 trillion unfunded Medicare liability and turned it into a campaign commercial. Of course, the idiots at the Herald Leader and Courier Journal, the area of Kentucky papers, didn't find it worthwhile to ask Conway to provide his own solutions. But then again, Conservative Edge doesn't believe that Conway is bright enough to know that Medicare has a problem, let alone have the intellectual heft to propose a solution. Remember, Conway is the dolt who proposed lending money to businesses to hire as a solution to our economic problems. Now, I don't know to what extent this is a theme, that Jack Conway is not bright. Are you aware of that being something that is an attempted attack line?
No, I haven't come across that a whole lot. I did come across someone who accused him of, being a terrorist sympathizer because he wants to bring the Guantanamo detainees to America and maybe even put them in Kentucky.
Right, there was a conservative blog, Free Man in Kentucky, who had a headline, "Why is the media ignoring Jack Conway wanting to shut down Gitmo and bring him to the U.S., maybe Kentucky?" For a man who says Kentucky first, does he mean in where to bring detainees? We know he supported the Iraq War and would possibly look at Pakistan for a potential war. Is this man really taking our soldiers seriously? His support of the Iraq War was a voice that supported making our troops have senseless injuries and deaths. When would the press wake up and press him on these issues? It seemed to be almost taking a Ron Paul anti-war libertarian line on top of raising the specter of Gitmo detainees being in Kentucky.
And anyway, they're going to Illinois. They're coming to my state. Whatever.
Well, good thing you got out of Dodge and went to Washington. Now you'll be safe.
Another thing that had come up, though, was that Rand Paul actually might hate Christians. This is something that had come up back from his college days. His nefarious fraternity that he was in made fun of Baptists at his college he went to. So, the mudslinging is not limited just to Alaska and Illinois.
Yeah, I find the digging through people's college days always a strange attack move. I mean, why anyone should be held accountable for everyone does plenty of silly and stupid things in college. You could find that about any person, and why that should then somehow be indicative of what you believe as an adult is beyond me.
Yeah, my favorite line comes from Steve Bannon at Washington Monthly's Political Animal, and he said, "For the record, so long as he never hurt anyone, I don't care what Rand Paul did in college. I don't think voters should either. I do care that he's an extremist with a radical policy agenda right now." And, I don't 100% agree with the fact that he's radical, but I think the sentiment is absolutely appropriate.
Now, we're taping this Thursday afternoon. This is a few hours before the one and only debate between Harry Reid and Sharon Angle. So I'm saddened we can't get blog reaction to that, because I imagine this will probably be... well, you know, the Whitman-Jerry Brown debates are pretty interesting to watch, but I suspect Reid Angle might be the best of the lot. Having said that, there certainly is interesting blogging around the race. Las Vegas Gleaner, which has long been one of the most entertaining Nevada blogs, has a running theme that Sharon Angle is basically competing with Christine O'Donnell as the craziest candidate in the field. And so a few days ago, he said, Christine O'Donnell continues to enjoy a comfortable lead, but rival Sharon Angle refused to accept defeat and is working hard to regain her frontrunner status in the high-profile race to see who is America's most hilariously baddie she-teabagger of the 2010 campaign. Hoping to climb back into contention, Angle recently warned that the Constitution, which is holy, is being replaced by Sharia law, which is not. And if Harry is reelected, all American women will be forced to report to government freedom destruction centers to obtain their burqas. Death panels are located in the auditorium adjacent to the lobby. Surrender your guns in the second floor conference room. I thought for the last few weeks, Angle has done a pretty good job at getting back on a message on a more mainstream
keeping the crazy in check.
What's that?
Keeping the crazy in check.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. I mean, Reid obviously is digging up a lot of her old past statements, and Angle was kind of flat-footed for a while, but she kind of got in a groove, and the polling is still dead heat. And then to kind of go off on a bender and say there are two existing American cities that are presently under Sharia law seemed to get off track.
A little bit, yeah. Not the number one issue in the campaign.
But now, how fringy is this on the right? Is this so commonplace on the right that this is actually happening that it wouldn't have occurred to her that she was going off the beam?
Well, Center for Security Policy, the Frank Gaffney group, they just released a giant report saying that Sharia law was this looming giant danger. So the thought is out there, but I don't think it has traction among a bunch of most credible groups.
I honestly don't know what to say in response to this.
Yeah. Yeah, I like their contest though. I will watch that bated breath. Another interesting bit of news out of the Las Vegas or out of the Nevada race is they just came out with a ballot, and Tea Party candidate Scott Ashjian, his party is listed, is abbreviated as TPN, and he wants it to be TEA so people can tell that he's a Tea Partier, and now it just looks like he's something else. So I don't know if you remember
Tea Party something or.
Right. This is, David Schwartz at the Las Vegas Sun points it out. So I don't know if you remember from a few weeks back when Sharon Angle was caught on tape talking to him, trying to get him to drop out of the race because he was pulling support away from her that she thought she needed. So this is when she said, you know, that she had juice and she could get him in front of people that had supported her and, you know, Jim DeMint and Tom Coburn. And it was just this really awful, terrible phone call. So... This guy has gotten his comeuppance, apparently.
Though I've heard it argued that that when you listen to the tapes, that she comes off well, even though she's exposing a lot of fractures in the Republican Party, that she at least sounds like how she sounds in public, that she is this crusading insurgent that's trying to upend the Republican establishment, and that she actually believes what she says.
Oh, I think she believes what she says. it's just a matter of who actually supports that, because we've seen a big split in the Republicans in Nevada. The dean of the Nevada Senate actually just came out and endorsed Harry Reid very begrudgingly, but his statement says, "We need someone in the U.S. Senate who can be effective, work with others, and best represent the interests of our state." And he felt that that was Harry Reid. He said he still is opposed to Obama and the Obama agenda, but he just has no confidence in Sharon Angle.
Now, when, you know, something similar happened, you know, back in, it was last year at Upstate New York when The local Republican in a special election endorsed Didis Kosafaza, who was a moderate, and national conservatives got very upset. Newt Gingrich tried to keep the right at bay and say, "Hey, you got to listen to your local Republicans. Don't be outsiders telling folks what to do." And Newt Gingrich was attacked as being a rhino. This is before his Secular Socialist Machine book was published. And I wonder, is there a similar dynamic happening here, where are there national conservatives that are mad at the local Nevada Republicans for abandoning Sharon Angle?
I think so. There's been definitely a lot of discontent on the right with how the NRSC has picked and supported candidates. Even when Christine O'Donnell first won, it was, you know, there were rumblings that they weren't going to fund her, and then people started stepping up and actually, you know, they said that they would stand behind the candidate. But there definitely has been a lot of unhappiness as to what candidates were picked, how they were picked, and I think this definitely has implications for how the party will operate going forward. Will it fold the insurgent Tea Party wing in, or will it try to, will they try to operate in parallel? It's, you know, that sort of remains to be seen.
Well, I imagine a lot of it's going to hinge upon how well do these Tea Party insurgent candidates do. If you have a bunch like Angle and like Christine O'Donnell and like Joe Miller, Ken Buck in Colorado, fall short, and you could say, "Hey, we would have taken over the Senate if not for you guys," then I'd imagine there's going to be quite the bloodletting.
Yeah. So is it that the Republican Party has just moved too far to the right, which is what people like David Frum have argued, or is it that this is just the direction the party's going in, and, you know, hell or high water?
I've talked about this with some other folks in these Weekend Blog segments, and what I still struggle with is, I mean, in my mind, the difference between, say, Lisa Murkowski and Joe Miller is fairly slight as far as things you actually vote on in Congress. There's definitely a difference in that Joe Miller thinks that unemployment insurance is unconstitutional, and Lisa Murkowski just votes against unemployment insurance, not on constitutional grounds. So there's some deeper ideological differences, but as far as the actual voting matters are concerned, you know, Murkowski wasn't someone who went rogue. And so it's hard for folks on the left to understand why this tension even exists if there aren't actual voting matters that are breaking the party apart.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to be pretty symbolic. I've already heard from, I don't remember where, that the Tea Party wants to knock off Kay Bailey Hutchinson and Olympia Snowe in 2012, that they're too moderate. So,
I mean, Snow, I would get Snow. I mean, Snow actually votes with Democrats on some things.
Yeah. But I think, you know, it definitely remains to be seen, where is this coming from? Is it coming from national groups? Is it coming from the Club for Growth? Or is it coming from local groups? Because as far as I'm aware, what a Republican does in Maine is a lot different than what a Republican does in Texas. And so is this just part of this national push from central Tea Party groups, or is it actual ground, grassroots opposition in their own states?
One other issue with the Reed Angle race, there's been a back and forth in the ad wars about what both have done in regards to sex offenders. Reed has run an ad saying that Angle is one of two legislatures in the state legislature to vote against a bill that would crack down on sex offenders. And Angle has retorted with an ad saying that Reed voted to give sex offenders Viagra. So you had John Ralston, who is the dean of the Nevada Political Press Corps. He's been profiled in a number of places, being sort of a one-man band on print and online and on TV. He had a blog post saying, "This is bizarre, even for Angle, who has become highly skilled at changing what actually occurred when asked about it." She said on that radio show, "This might have to do more with our rights under the First Amendment. They're trying to place more government control within places like churches and private businesses. We already have a law in place in Nevada where you do have to report if you're a sex offender. So we still want overreaching government to go in there and begin to attack groups like the Boy Scouts and churches." And Ralston actually says, more bizarre, attack groups like Boy Scouts and churches, attack even more bizarre. She mentions the Boy Scouts, but they testified for the bill, which passed almost unanimously. So he found her justification incredulous. But he also went on to say that he thought that Reed's attack was not a clean shot either, saying, is it legitimate to call Angle extreme for being one of only three lawmakers to oppose this relatively non-controversial bill? I suppose, but others would say she's being principled, being absolutist on privacy issues, even if it possibly could result in kids being less safe. This is a classic case of cherry-picking a vote to make a case, noting that she had voted for the bill in committee previously. Unfortunately for Angle, there are a lot of issues where she was a tiny minority voting against, so if it's General Reed theme, I think it just goes a bit too far, and I give it a C. I don't know if Ralston making that kind of nuanced analysis of this changes the reaction of the public about this sort of vote, or for that matter, Angle's counterattack that Reed voted to give sex offenders Viagra, which was challenged by the blog Blue Lion, L-Y-O-N. Her search is a flat-out lie. Voting against the bill that contains language that prohibits such a thing is not the same as voting for a bill that endorses it. I don't know if your sense is that this issue is becoming salient in Nevada or not.
No, I don't think so. I think it's still, Nevada still has a 14.2% unemployment rate. I think that's really where people's concerns are.
And a huge foreclosure issue.
Right, right. So I think even though Nevada is definitely a very privacy, and I would say personally pretty libertarian, given the, how the economy is structured and with, the prostitution and stuff, I would say that personally people are attuned to those, but that's not the reason that someone is going to get out and vote, so.
Now, there was, because of that above average unemployment and above average foreclosure issue is certainly the main reason why Reed, normally a Senate Majority Leader does not struggle in a reelection campaign.
Right.
But there was a Daily Beast piece that he brought to my attention by Steve Freese that made a case why Reed is still in the game.
I'm surprised that he is just not farther ahead, like you mentioned. I'm totally blanking on the Daily Beast piece right now.
I mean to blindside. I thought at the... After Ang was nominated, Reed came in with a real blast of attack ads that put a decent-sized lead between him and Angle, and seemed to be a template for how to run against a Tea Party candidate. This was, still in the summer where many of the Tea Party-affiliated candidates hadn't won their primaries yet. And certainly it's been a key for keeping Reed viable. But it hasn't been quite enough to pull him ahead cleanly and stress free, because Angle has still been able to run some tough attacks, legit or not legit, depending on your perspective. And I sense that's a theme in a lot of these races, whether the Democrat is up or down. There are just a lot of close races, period, in Democratically held seats and Republican held seats, that make it very hard to game out what's actually going to happen on Election Day.
Yeah, and that's why we see, Cook Political Report, that the numbers that are toss-ups, it's varying so widely, and there are a lot more that are toss-ups, but it's not just all going to in favor of the Republicans. There are a couple that are swinging the other way as well, so.
Now, where you work, you work for a polling outfit, correct?
Yeah.
I've personally become increasingly skeptical of almost all polling, particularly polls with likely voter screens.
There are major caveats, and I think what concerns me is that polls have started to drive the political narrative now,
right,
and there are some that are just not legitimate.
I mean, that's what sort of, it's one thing, it's perfectly legitimate as a pollster to say, this is my best analysis of what the turnout's going to be and what I think the likely voter pool is going to be. To then hang all of your news coverage on that subjective assessment seems a bit much.
Right, and there's very little transparency in what goes into the likely voter screens, which is also concerning. I try to pull registered voter stuff whenever you can, or whenever it's available, but that it just unfortunately is not very much.
No one's even doing that right now. They're only doing likely voter polls.
Right. So there's that concern, and there's also robocalls versus actually speaking to people, and then cell phones. Chuck Todd from NBC has been hitting on this, that if you're not sampling cell phones, then you're weighting your other data really heavily, and how will that affect, that could skew your information very wildly.
And polls are trying to compensate for that, right?
Right.
It's a question of how well they are doing that.
No.
Do you have a sense that I feel like the quality of the state and local polling is generally not as strong as the national polling? Is that a fair conclusion?
I do think that there are some well-respected local organizations. I think the Sooner poll is good. Quinnipiac, they only do a few states, but I think they do a pretty thorough job. PPIC in California, the Public Policy Institute of California, I think does good stuff. But there are national shops that are shoddy too. I'm not going to name names, but I think that there are some people, that they churn out all this information, but it's not necessarily useful because it's so skewed, because there are shops that also have pretty obvious ideological biases. I guess it sort of cuts both ways.
Well, and the state polling office you just listed, I mean, those are all ones that have long reputations polling in their own state or a series of states like Quinnipiac, so they presumably have a good sense of how those electorates work, and they can make more informed judgments how they weigh their poll data.
Right,
and if you're
right,
just
yeah.
doing
so
a rifle
down.
Shot automated poll, because you can do it for cheap, and you'll have a
exactly.
number, and you'll get a news headline out of it, there's no way to there's no accountability for that. Maybe that poll is going to change the media narrative and then become a self-fulfilling prophecy so you look good. But there's no way to actually know if these polls are true reflections of the full electorate.
Exactly. And that's what we've seen in Illinois recently, about 2 weeks ago. It was the DNC put out one poll, and then the Republicans countered with another poll. And they're both so wildly different that it's no one knows what the actual electorate is, and then you start, as you mentioned, then it does become a self-fulfilling prophecy, and that's not good either.
I mean, certainly, I can tell just anecdotally, almost everyone that I know on the left is following Nate Silver, who founded 538, which is now part of NewYorkTimes.com, religiously, and what he's largely doing is taking averages of poll data and running it through a model which games at tens of thousands of different scenarios.
Yeah, he's been weighting polls, giving some more credibility than others, which I think is really important.
I'm sorry,
say
that again?
He's been on 538. He weights polls to give some more credibility than others,
which may be very smart, but also is a subjective act.
Yeah. But I think also Mark Blumenthal over at pollster.com, which is now part of Huffington Post, they've been putting out a lot of articles cautioning against, the various fallibilities of polls. So I think that's good just to raise awareness of.
But I sense that more people, I hear more people coming to me about what Nate Silver is saying, because the basic, the whole table that he has on the right is, to give me, he writes that there is always inherent uncertainty, so I don't mean to put words in Nate's mouth, but the model that he has gives a veneer of certainty. This is the 75% chance of this happening. And people really latch onto that as being definitive. Whereas what Mark Blumenthal is doing at Huffington Post is usually emphasizing the uncertainty. And that stuff gets less traction in people's conversations, I suspect.
Yeah. But there is, I'm right now tracking every Senate and gubernatorial poll that comes out every day, and it's just, there's just so much information. It's like mind-boggling.
I mean, does it just feel like noise at this point?
Yeah, there's just so many, of the 37 gubernatorial races, there are, 20 plus polls a day across the country. It's just, there's so much information, it's hard to...
So, is you and your show even getting into the business of prognostication?
No.
So what is your focus going to be between now and Election Day?
Me personally, I'm just doing, well, I guess the House is out, and the Senate's out, so we have clients, so I'm working on client stuff.
I don't need you to get into proprietary information. Reveal what you're doing.
Not all that interesting. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Oh, perhaps we should leave it on that note. Is there anything else that we wanted to mention we didn't get to?
No, I think that's about it.
Excellent. Well, Nikki, always good to talk to you. Where can people find your stuff again?
We're at winstongroup.net or over at washingtonexaminer.com.
Excellent. I hope to talk to you again soon.
Okay, thanks a lot. Have a good day.
Take care.